It's hard to believe, but it's been exactly 1 year since the cold-blooded killing, the cold-blooded murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, who was shot and killed in Midtown Manhattan December 4th of 2024. And now, the man at the center of all this, who's accused of this horrific crime, Luigi Mangione, is fighting along with his defense team to erase the gun he purportedly used, as well as the notebook with the manifesto and even the words he allegedly spoke after his arrest, trying to get it all dismissed as potential evidence.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the show that brings you the very best guests in all of true crime. It was 1 year ago exactly that UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson was walking to a conference in Midtown Manhattan at the crack of dawn when he was shot in the back. He didn't know it was coming. It was a 9mm gun with a suppressor, otherwise known as a silencer, a killing that absolutely stunned the pharmaceutical and insurance world, as well as Wall Street, and frankly, the entire country, with reverberations felt around the world. And today, a year later, the man accused of that execution-style killing, Luigi Mangione, continued to appear inside a courtroom in New York City, back in Manhattan. But this hearing is not necessarily about guilt or innocence. It is really about what is the jury going to be allowed to see. Shout out to Lauren Conlin, who's writing now for LA Magazine and does reporting for Nancy Grace. She had a young woman on who slept out for hours and hours, if not days, just to get inside the courtroom with Luigi Mangione, saying she's one of his biggest supporters. This is a smart young woman from Princeton, New Jersey. And you got to ask yourself, the hell is going on? What is wrong with society supporting a cold-blooded killer? Are there problems with the healthcare system in the United States? Absolutely. But does that mean that any lunatic can pick up a gun and kill the CEO of a healthcare company? That is not the American way. That's not the human way. It's absolutely crazy. But look, we saw plenty of Diddy supporters. I was in the federal courthouse in Lower Manhattan and saw those supporters coming every day to support Sean Combs. And while he got a lighter sentence and was set to possibly have been overcharged, his crimes obviously were really heinous. All you have to do is ask Cassie Ventura about that. But back to Luigi Mangione. Over the last several days, prosecutors inside the courtroom have revealed new body cam footage, new testimony about what Luigi Mangione reportedly said after his arrest. We found out more about a bus ticket, which was made under a fake name. Luigi Mangione gave out a couple of fake names, and even a police admission that an officer lied to Luigi Mangione during the arrest just to keep him calm. Is that kosher? Is that okay? That is one of the things in question. So tonight, doing a deep textured breakdown of where this hearing stands this week, why it matters, and why Luigi Mangione has essentially been in court every single day in New York City the year following the actual murder of this UnitedHealthcare CEO. So everything is hanging basically in the balance about what this judge decides to do, what this judge decides to either suppress or admit and allow into evidence in this case. So let's get right into it. What is the hearing really about? It's really not about the shooting. It's about the rules, about what is allowed in and out of the courtroom. The central question here is, will the jury ever even see this 3D printed gun? Will they ever see the so-called manifesto, or will they ever hear Luigi Mangione's own words on that body cam footage that we saw in court from Altoona, Pennsylvania? The defense team here wants the judge to suppress that 9mm gun. It was found in his backpack. They want that manifesto basically turned away. The prosecutors are calling it a manifesto. The defense is essentially just calling it notes that he took in a notebook. I guess manifesto sounds a little bit cooler. The Unabomber had a manifesto. He's been compared, Luigi Mangione has, to Ted Kaczynski. He does not like that comparison, and he has made it fairly well known that he does not like it. All statements that Luigi Mangione made at or after the arrest, those are all in question and all part of this hearing. And potentially even some of the travel evidence, like the Greyhound ticket that he used to get into Pennsylvania, which was reportedly made or purchased under a fake name. The arrest, the defense says, was based on deception, not lawful procedure. So they're really going to the heart of the American legal system, the United States Constitution. They're picking apart little things here, which are not so little, including Miranda rights. I mean, they're taking a close look at it, is a better way to put it. They say that the search of his materials on his person was a warrantless search, and you need a search warrant. Also, that some questioning was done before Miranda rights were read, and evidence, they say, the defense for Luigi Mangione should be tossed under both the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. One criminal defense attorney plainly put it, and I quote here, none of this should ever reach a jury, but most legal analysts have chimed in to say that a lot of this likely will still come into play. Now, the body cam footage, what is it that we saw in court? It's new footage from the arrest in Altoona, Pennsylvania. You'll recall he was in that McDonald's. There were some people who were there who felt he looked suspicious. It was 4 years after COVID, but he had a COVID mask on in Pennsylvania, where a lot of people were not wearing them. The body cam shows this officer approaching Luigi Mangione very quietly, then asking him to remove his surgical mask. Once that happens, he says right away, the officer does, that's him. That's a guy essentially who committed this crime. He knew it right away. But Luigi Mangione gives a false name. He is not immediately told that he is a murder suspect. He's questioned before formal rights are read. Those are the Miranda rights. So then comes the most important detail, which was revealed under oath this week in the Manhattan courthouse. Officer Joseph Detweiler admitted in open court that he lied intentionally to Luigi Mangione. He told them that they were responding to a quote unquote loitering complaint and that they were not hunting a murder suspect. Now, the media reports that this was actually done intentionally to keep Luigi Mangione calm and cooperative. So why does this matter? It goes right to the heart of the issue of suppression. The defense is going to argue and is already arguing that you cannot obtain evidence by deception and then claim it was voluntary. Again, you cannot obtain evidence by deception, telling them you're there for something other than you're there for, and then claiming that the information they got was voluntary. That alone could potentially sink the gun, the notebook, and any statements he made. What was found on Luigi Mangione at the time of his arrest? A lot of things. Police say they recovered that 3D printed 9mm pistol. There was a suppressor, otherwise known as a silencer, that he had with him, Luigi Mangione. A notebook with ideological writings. And by the way, why did he still have the gun? Was it for protection? Was he planning to put out a hit on someone else? At the time, you'll recall, there was talk that he was possibly going to try to do this to somebody else. Luigi Mangione also had multiple IDs on him. He comes from wealth. His family is very well-to-do. He had over $7,000 in cash on him. Now, the Greyhound ticket that he purchased was under the name Sam Dawson. Sam Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N, like Richard Dawson of Family Feud fame. He had a turtle-themed wallet stuffed with money. That's an interesting little detail. A turtle-themed wallet. I don't know if those are Ninja Turtles or actual turtles. But if these details, you know, reach a jury that he's got the cash, he's got the gun, he's got the suppressor, he's got the ticket to Altoona under a fake name, these are all pieces of evidence and details that are likely to sink him in front of a jury. And that is why the defense is working so vociferously to try to get it removed from potential evidence. Now, there was an quote unquote, I don't want to talk moment. The Associated Press is reporting heavily about this, that minutes after the officers approached Luigi Mangione, he said to them, and I quote, "I don't want to talk." So the defense argued in court this week that any questioning after that point violated Miranda. You've seen it a lot of times in the interview room. You know, I want my lawyer. In this case, he did not say, "I want a lawyer." According to sworn testimony, he simply said, "I don't want to talk." So how does that toe the line in terms of what is admissible and what is not? Now, if the judge agrees, every statement after those words could potentially be tossed, including alleged admissions about the gun, including any discussion about where he was going or why he uses fake name Sam Dawson. The government, the prosecution obviously wants all of that stuff to come in. Now, there was also explosive testimony from the prison guard. A corrections officer testified this week, and I quote here again, "Mangione told me the gun was in his bag." The defense immediately challenged this in court as, again, not being Mirandized, potentially coercive, since you're talking about a prison guard, made while Mangione was in this plexiglass cell that they were holding him in to keep an eye on him. Basically what they refer to as a suicide watch cell. They recorded during what guards called efforts to avoid an Epstein style situation. So they were recording him too. And where does that go in terms of the violation of his civil rights? These are all things, again, that came up that the defense is arguing adamantly about to try to get this, again, suppressed. Now, if the judge does suppress this admission, the gun is no longer linked to him by his own words, and the prosecutors lose one of their biggest anchors, which is that weapon. As far as intent goes to commit this crime, the notebook, the so-called manifesto, is a big part of that. Prosecutors say that the notebook contains very angry writings, some of which have been leaked already, about the health insurance industry in his own words. So that's very damning. Personal grievances, notes suggesting that Luigi Mangione was actually planning an attack, which it appears he carried out. And also, maybe most disgustingly, a justification, at least in his own twisted mind, for targeting a CEO. Prosecutors insist that this so-called manifesto shows both motive and premeditation. The defense says it is fruit of the poisonous tree or fruit of an unconstitutional search. If the notebook is tossed, prosecutors now lose a big part, if not all, of their motive, and the case becomes a pure whodunit with no ideological framework. The bus ticket under a fake name. It was actually People Magazine, People.com. It used to be People Magazine. Now everything's at .com. So People.com, they actually revealed the newest detail that Luigi Mangione had this Greyhound bus ticket under the alias Sam Dawson. And why does this matter? It suggests a possible flight risk. It indicates consciousness of guilt. He knew he was up to no good, so he was using a fake name. It connects him to this large amount of cash. And it provides a narrative that he was, in fact, trying to disappear or get out of Dodge. And he did disappear for about 5 days as authorities were hunting him down. The defense is simply going to say, look, possessing a bus ticket is not a crime. And if the bag search is illegal, that ticket is excluded anyway. That bus ticket was in the bag that he had. So if they got that bag and searched it with a warrantless search, maybe that ticket remains out, and maybe the government, the prosecution here, is in a bit of trouble. The role of deception and what the judge has to decide, that this hearing was really at the crossroads of a constitutional, I guess, dilemma. Prosecutors are saying here a few things. Number one, the officers acted responsibly. Number two, they had probable cause. We always hear about probable cause. They had the right enough belief that something was amiss to go ahead and ask for these things. That public danger as well justified their tactics here, and that the evidence is simply overwhelming. Now, the defense, and this is a very strong defense team, say that deception invalidates consent. Deception invalidates consent. That the warrantless search directly violates his Fourth Amendment right. The statements made violate his Fifth Amendment right, which is right to remain silent. And the officer's false pretext, saying, hey, we're just here because of, we heard there's a disturbance, that pretext shows intentional misconduct. This, of course, all according to the defense. RollingStone.com, used to be magazine, they point to the broader issue here, which is, at what point does deception cross from strategy into a constitutional violation? I guess that's, you know, that's a question as old as law enforcement, which is when, at what point, you know, we know that police officers intentionally, sometimes in the interview room, intentionally are deceptive or deceived. But at what point does that diverge from a strategy into a constitutional violation of a person's civil rights? So this is already a very fascinating case in terms of the implications and the legal issues that are arising from it. Again, if the judge suppresses all of this evidence that we just talked about, the prosecutors lose almost everything. They lose the gun, the notebook, the alias ticket, the money trail, the prison guard testimony, any and all of the statements. They're left simply with surveillance video, body cam of the arrest. That might be enough. The 911 call, those are from people inside the McDonald's who said, look, we think this guy is in here, as well as witness identification. It is still a case, but a much weaker one. So what happens if evidence of all of it is admitted? Then the prosecutors have the means. That's the gun with the silencer, the motive, the notebook, his manifesto, all his griping and complaining, his intent, which is also his ideological writings, his flight, which is his Greyhound ticket, not literal flight, but flight from New York. So his Greyhound bus ticket with the name Sam Dawson and those wads of cash in the amount of $7,000. Also, consciousness of guilt they have with the fake name and lying and admissions. He says the gun was in my bag. It would be, if all this stuff stays in, one of the stronger premeditated murder cases that I can think of, and probably that you can think of as well. So a lot is going to hinge on this judge making these decisions. The public pressure, 1 year since the murder, it was a solemn milestone today. This happened again right on 6th Avenue in Midtown Manhattan, a year since Brian Thompson was killed. He left behind an estranged wife and two sons that he was really close to. And I remember, I mean, they're going through so much pain. In the early days, people were wondering if the wife had something to do with this. Imagine that. You have nothing to do with this. And the public is pointing fingers at you. So the family is obviously watching this really closely. The healthcare system and the people who run it and the legislators who help legislate it, they're all watching this. Wall Street is watching. Other healthcare CEOs are watching. I'm sure they all have protection now. And employees at United Healthcare are watching. And I want to underscore, this is not an anniversary, because an anniversary typically implies a celebration. It's just a date of intense impact. Just like, excuse me, with the University of Idaho murders. I try to keep away from the word anniversary out of respect to the victims. It's just a year that has gone by, and a year now, a year later, with tremendous potential impacts inside the courtroom, and it's giving us a glimpse, at least a hint at what some of the issues can be and what justice could look like. So 1 year since the murder of Brian Thompson, this courtroom is not debating what happened on that Manhattan sidewalk. We know he was murdered out there. The debate inside the courtroom is whether the evidence, the gun, the writing, the words are ever going to be shown to a jury. Tonight is not about guilt. It's all about the Constitution. It's about whether police deception invalidates a search, whether a suspect's silence should have been respected, and whether public outrage tilts the proverbial scales of justice. Whatever the judge decides in this suppression fight, it will shape the entire trial. There's no doubt about that. And it's going to determine what the jurors see and how they see it, and potentially whether they see the full story or just part of a story. So, as always, like Mayor Ed Koch used to say, tell me how I'm doing. He used to ask New Yorkers that. So tell me how we're doing here. How do you like these shorter, little, deeper dives into particular stories? What do you think of Luigi Mangione? What do you think of the people that think he is a hero of sorts? Please like, please subscribe. We've got a Patreon page. I've got a book out about my mother, who's a child Holocaust survivor. It is the holidays. There's the QR code. It's on Audible. It's a great read, not because I wrote it, but because it's an unbelievable story with the things that she had to overcome. And on Audible, you get to hear she and I voice it. Gotten overwhelmingly good feedback on this, and now working on the second book. So with the holidays here and a somber story like this, maybe it is time for some perspective with a little read of Surviving the Survivor, the title of the book, the same as the podcast. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. As you all know, we are live Monday to Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Fridays, it is 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time with Carm. We will see you on the flip side. Love you, America. Justice here for United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson and his family.